Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. This episode is another installment in our Practitioner Spotlight series. So this is a series that I created, and you'll see these practitioner interviews come up repeatedly because in my Facebook community, I find that people are always looking for medical doctors who can help with more complex cases, or some people just like working with someone who's close to them. And so I've made it a goal to try and interview medical doctors on a regular basis so that I'm able to give you guys exposure to people who are working in the world of functional medicine, regenerative medicine, lifestyle medicine. And so today's guest is one of those people. Her name is Dr. Siobhan Newman. She is a fellow of Dr. Seed's SSRP Mastermind. So that tells you that she works with peptides. And Dr. Newman has this incredibly great approach. And what's interesting about her is she started off as an emergency room doctor. And she loved the pace. She loves that pace of the emergency room. She's also a professor. She teaches in med schools. But after, you know, a lifetime of working in the emergency room, she started to realize that as much as she was able to save people's lives, she wasn't necessarily able to support them in the way that she wanted. And also, her own transition as a woman through menopause really got her thinking about the type of medicine that she was practicing and how the kind of support that people needed. So Dr. Newman's story is amazing. We talk about all of the different aspects of her practice. We talk about how she integrates peptides into her practice with her patients. And she's just has a great story and a really nice energy about her. I think you'll enjoy getting to know her as I did. So if you're looking to reach Dr. Newman, you can email her at admin@newmanlifecare.com. You also can go to her website's not quite up yet from what I can tell, but she's got a Facebook page, which is Newman Life Care MD. And in any event, you can use that email and find her that way. So it's Dr. Siobhan Newman, and Siobhan is spelled S-I-O-B, like Bob, H-A-N. And we, of course, will have all of these links in the show notes for you. So enjoy the interview. And of course, if you get value out of this podcast, as always, please make sure that you share it out with your network, with your friends, or anyone in particular you think would get value out of this particular episode. If you have any questions or any comments, you can find me through my website at natnidham.com or in the Optimizing Superhuman Performance group on Facebook or Biohacking Superhuman Performance group on MeWe. And of course, on Instagram at Natalie Nidham. Natalie has an H in it, N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E. So thank you so much for being here, and I appreciate you guys, and I look forward to hearing your comments and questions after the episode. Enjoy. Welcome, Dr. Siobhan Newman, to the show. It is so nice to have you. Thank you so much for agreeing to spend time with me today.
Oh, thank you, Natalie. I'm so glad to be here today.
I have to say that one of the many things that I love about this part of my job is getting to meet people like you and to hear all these amazing stories. I think that medical people like yourself are really changing the face of medicine right now, and all the stories we can hear, and it's really inspiring and frankly heartening.
Yeah. It's a very exciting time. I think we're finally taking medicine in the direction it needs to go. I think there's been some bad outcomes, but medicine has gone in a direction we don't need it to go. And I think we need to go get our bearings back and go back in a direction where we're helping the body heal itself. And I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so great. And so, on that note, I think Why don't we start with where you started? Because I think that you started in a very different place. Like right now, you run a preventative and lifestyle practice in,
I'm in Southern California. I'm virtually based, so I have patients all over the country, but I'm based out of Southern California. But yeah, I started as an emergency room doctor. I've been an emergency room doctor for 20 years. So I originally trained in family practice, but I ended up doing full-time emergency room and boarded in that also. But so the emergency room was great for lifestyle-wise for myself. I like it. I like the fast pace, but it was really hard seeing people very sick at a very bad place in their life over and over again. And I really didn't think I can help them. I mean, I can maybe help them for that moment, get through a heart attack or stroke, but it's horrible to see people with years and years they don't even know of abuse that caused this. You even see it in younger people. I see young kids who, you know, are headed down a pathway to destruction.
Right. And
I can give them maybe a couple helpful hints in the emergency room. You know, it's fast paced. I got 20 patients and I feel like I even write down books for them or something, but I just feel like I can't help them. So I just had to do something else. I had to do something that I wanted to do was what I originally went into medicine, just to help people.
Amazing. So what was it that made you, you know, was there a particular event or moment in time when you just kind of stopped and said, okay, this has to, because I'm sure, you know, I myself had a career change. And so I did whatever I was doing. And there was a period of time where I was like, oh my God, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. There's got to be something better. There's got to be, until the day that something happens and you go, this is it. This conversation's over. I'm now taking action. So
well, I think as a female, we know that we empower ourselves. Women are powerful we can handle a bunch of things at one time. We have kids, we have our work, we have our husbands or whatever you have, your significant other, but you are juggling a lot of things. So all of a sudden I'm in the emergency room, I'm turning 50 and I'm going through menopause. And I have 14 patients, I've got nurses, I answer the phone to a physician and I truly can't recall my patient. Why? I have to open up my chart, look at it again. I'm like, what's wrong with my brain? What happened to my brain? Nothing. I'm sleeping well. And so I noticed that menopause for me was a life-changing event. When women go through menopause, you stop your hormones and you're supposed to just say, this is okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's okay about this? That I can't think, that I'm fatigued, that I'm getting heavier. My muscle is going away. I have brain fog. I have to work. I have to take care of people. And that sent me through a self journey. To re-educate myself and to go further into my medicine and go back to my medicine and go like, what is our bodies doing? What are hormones? What are proteins? And that led me to learning all about bioidentical hormone replacement. And that even led me further to lifestyle medicine, sleep, stress, eating, fasting, all the things that our body has to do to make our cells work efficiently. And then the next step was the great step is learning about peptides. Mm-hmm. And then learning about the cell again.
Yeah. Yeah,
I went to medical school 25 years ago, or maybe longer, but we learned about the cell and there's been great advances, DNA, epigenetics, just how the protein's made. It's just an amazing, molecular medicine is amazing, but we need to get the body to do what it naturally needs to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of, we don't need to mask things. We don't need to put something on top of it. We don't need to add other side effects for medicines. We need to get the cells and the body to function like it did when it was at its prime. So that's my goal.
Amazing. So tell me, how did you hear about peptides? How did you hear about peptides? Because I heard about peptides at a conference. So.
I think it was, at a conference. So at a conferences are great. So as I was able to go back to conferences, I've always been to conferences, but I started digging more and more into bioidentical hormones and lifestyle medicine. And I think a doctor actually introduced to myself about a growth hormone, a secretagogue to myself. And I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. So of course I dug into it. So I went and you start asking everybody around you. So I found a conference. I became peptide certified through A4M, the Anti-Aging Academy, which Dr. William Seitz taught. So
yeah.
I was one of the first classes to be certified. We became certified, went through tons of hours of training. And I was just opening my eyes of a man who, wow, that he loves the cell. He loves knowledge. He loves truly learning on how things molecularly work. Yeah. And then learned all about peptides and went from there, jumped into IPS, which is the International Peptide Society. And then Dr. William Seitz calls me on the phone. Is like, I'm starting a SSRP. It's going to be a small group. We're going to collaborate. We're going to be like we were when we were in residency. We're going to talk. We're going to learn about patients. We're going to do case studies, and we're going to meet on a regular basis. I was like, wow. So we've already had two masterminds, and the third one's coming up, and we collaborate together, and we just dig into the cell and dig into the treatments of the peptides and what they can do. And we bring up case studies. It's just phenomenal. For us to work together.
That's amazing. I actually got to sit in on the last SSRP mastermind. So I was one of the virtual people. Perfect. I actually think I saw your name in there. And I was blown away by, first of all, the information, you know, how Dr. Seeds, and this is his thing, right? Taking it back to what's the cell doing? What do we need it to be doing? And how do we able to do it? From the concept of if the cell is doing what it needs to do, it has the energy to initiate all the other cascades we need in the body.
Right. And the cell knows not what we need to do. We don't know. We got to let the cell do what it naturally needs to do.
Exactly.
And that's the amazing part is the cell is so complex. We do know things, but there's things we don't know. So as we grow and learn, but we got to allow the cell to get the signaling, to get the substrates, to get everything it needs to act right and make the right peptides to replicate its DNA properly, to die off when it needs to live when it needs to. Yeah, we just make the cell work right.
Yeah.
So that's, I like to take all this information. So one of my goals, or I think my strengths in my preventative practice, is taking that kind of information and then teaching a patient how to do this.
Amazing. So it's empowering your patients, really.
That's what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. A physician is a teacher. And I think, the original term is teacher. We want to teach you why it's helpful, teach you what you need. So if you need, if I look at some labs and I see you're very inflamed, I have to tell you why. Why is that important? Mm-hmm. What do we have to do to change that? Because that means your body is going to have a chronic disease. Your body is going to rebel against itself.
Right.
So sometimes we have to add things. Sometimes we have to take things away. But there's so many different ways to facets to get into correcting the cell. But peptides have really made that leaps and bounds even more helpful.
Yeah, no, that's truly amazing. So this SSRP mastermind, there's a number of you who are fellows.
Right.
I guess you're the people who've kind of been around longer and have deeper knowledge. And what's really cool to see is how you're bringing in newer physicians.
Correct.
And tapping into their knowledge as well, but bringing them along on this journey of optimization through peptides, which is, it's really quite an awesome, it's quite something.
It is. And I think when we learn from each other, we're going to go leaps and bounds instead of being isolated.
Yeah.
But the also thing is, I think that we also learn that you can't just use peptides if you haven't helped a patient get their body optimized in the first place. So I'm a true, people want to do Botox and make the outside look better, but I want to heal you from the inside. So as your cells become more radiant and having the right energy, so will your skin and your face and your body. But I know I'm healing you all the way from the inside. Like people who want to lose weight, that's not really losing weight. You want to transform your body. You want to get rid of the fat that's harmful, the fat around your gut. You might have a little fat in your thighs that might not be bad for you, but you want to get rid of the fat around your gut.
Yeah.
That's something that promotes inflammation and diabetes. And then you want to build muscle when you need to. You want to transform from the inside, and then you can do, you can get your peel or whatever you need. Yeah. But I just think it's super important to actually be helping people actually be healing and helping them have hope and empowerment and doing the things at 70 that they want to do.
I love that. Yeah, I love that.
You can't believe what I see in the ER. I see 63-year-old people that or my age. I can't believe how many times I walk into a room and say, that person is my age. Age shouldn't be like that. You got to rethink the way you age. You got to think, I want to ride a bike, or I want to get down the ground and play with my grandkids, or I want to continually have a sexual relationship with my spouse. There's so many things we need to look forward to. And we shouldn't just say, no, I'm good. I'm a diabetic. They personalize into, they are a disease. I'm hypertensive. I'm a diabetic.
Yeah.
I'm obese.
Yeah.
I'm tired all the time. And that's just not what we need to do in medicine. We need to empower you to prevent that and then reverse it. People don't know you can actually reverse metabolic syndrome or diabetes.
Exactly. And do you find also that people, people say, oh, diabetes runs in my family. And I remember like years ago saying, yeah, but could that not possibly be the, just because that's the way you were brought up and, you know, poor habits get either through ignorance or whatever the case may be, get passed on through the generations. And in many cases, I mean, it's very rare that it's an actual physiological or genetic, I mean, you may have a genetic predisposition, but we both know that through epigenetics, in many cases, we can flip those switches in a different direction, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So I think that when you try to claim something as your own, like diabetes, it's a misnomer. It's what medicine has taught us to do. Medicine is disease. American medicine is disease oriented. Physicians mm-hmm. get paid to treat a disease. We don't get paid to prevent a disease. Other countries do it differently. So we have to change our focus. What happened in the 90s and the 2000s to the American society? We learned that the fifth meal was important. They process all our food. We're drinking too much soda. So it's not because our parents were diabetic. It's because of how society has changed our eating habits. And so Absolutely. We need to get that back to how we ate in the 60s and 70s, just eating food from home. Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, when your mom said, don't snack after dinner, you're going to ruin your dinner. After dinner, you didn't eat anything. You went to bed. You naturally fasted for 10, 12, 14 hours naturally instead of having that late night snack that, you know, what's Jack in the Box, I think, that says you're supposed to eat something at, you know, midnight. The American diet. So, I mean, it's more about what's around us in our lifestyle. We don't sleep, working all the time, stresses, diseases, things in our plastic, we got to find all those things that changed our bodies to become sicker.
Yeah. Even the exposure to screens late at night, the whole issues around light exposure, you know, the right light at the right time, avoiding the artificial light at night, that kind of thing.
Right. Cause you know how important sleep is. Sleep is when you rejuvenate. Sleep is when your cells, learn to wake up and clean themselves. You release all your growth hormones during your sleep.
Yeah.
So you need to pulse it out. So if you don't sleep and you don't have a good release of melatonin into your brain, you're not going to heal. Melatonin is phenomenal hormone. Mm-hmm. It's anti-cancer. It's rejuvenative. It protects your heart, your liver, and it's something that comes out while you sleep. Yeah. So it's super important. Sleep is amazingly important, but all those things. So you got to be able to, you have to have time to teach your patients these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the current system doesn't really allow for it. So you have to step outside the existing model, as it were. Right. So let's go back to melatonin quickly, because I'm pretty fascinated with that hormone. And, you know, we're told that melatonin production naturally declines with age. So do you suggest to your patients that they supplement with melatonin after a certain age? Because you get all this, you get conflicting information. You get people saying, I mean, for me, it's like if I'm going to decline in melatonin, then I'm going to supplement melatonin as I age. I'm not going to give it to a 20-year-old necessarily, but I'll use it. But what are your thoughts on supplementing melatonin?
Oh, yes. I love melatonin. So there's so many different studies out there that show the benefits of melatonin, and it does decrease with age. It also, things about your hormones decrease in age. There's two things about that. You decrease production, but also your cells in your periphery. So the hormone is released from an organ. It's a protein. It goes all over your body and it attaches to your brain, your liver, your muscles, everything. So those receptors also get involuted and they get kind of clogged up with environmental toxins and they just don't respond to it anymore. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we can measure a hormone and it looks like it's normal, but you're not optimized because your body can't respond to it properly. So you got to go by your symptoms. You got to go by how you feel and how you look. But melatonin, so many studies show that it fights cancer. It fights heart disease. There's mm-hmm. I definitely supplement melatonin. I use a good source, supplement it. And some people, and there's different levels for everybody. Sometimes it's 2 milligrams, sometimes it's 20 milligrams, sometimes it's 10 milligrams. You can't really hurt yourself. And then melatonin, it naturally goes away with light. So in the morning, you wake up, you go outside, you open your eyes and the sunshine breaks down the melatonin again and you feel wonderful. It's not like taking a sleeping pill where you're adding a substance to your body and you can feel that next day grogginess or you can't concentrate. Melatonin isn't like that. It's a natural hormone.
Yeah. And although I know that genomically, some people might break it down a little slower than others. So for those people, I find if we give it to them a little earlier in the evening, it gives their body more time to break it down.
Right. So genomically, it's nice to look at for nutrigenomics. And I really like that, looking at genetics of people. And definitely people will metabolize things differently. But sometimes we'll sustain release versus an immediate release. Yeah. And they definitely find it different. Sometimes it's just preparations they tolerate differently, but definitely it's always good to look at the genomics.
Interesting. So you talk about the receptors getting clogged up with environmental toxins. Do you, in your practice, support, we know that the body has detoxification systems already built mm-hmm. in.
Right.
And so you get this huge, you get this soundbite out there that says, oh, any kind of detox is hogwash because your body can detox. But in my mind, our bodies are overwhelmed with toxins and sometimes need support to kind of overcome the burden that they're being put under, which is unnatural. So do you in your practice kind of take your clients, your patients through some kind of a detoxification protocol, or how do you handle that with them?
So it is very individualized. And then you can look at definitely lab wise, you can see where a person's at with inflammation and if they have signs that they have a lot of more toxins in their system, and also by their story, their history. But it's a definite, so sweating, you have to, even sauna sweating is so helpful. So it's not just one toxin. It's not that the fact that we're getting BPA in a water bottle we're drinking from, so we take away the water bottles. And then we put on a deodorant and we put on makeup, we put on hairspray. So we've just added cumulatively, especially in the United States, a ton of toxins that are affecting and clogging up our receptors, especially your estrogen receptors.
Yeah.
So you need to go around, and there's certain things you need to eliminate. There's elimination, and then you have to detoxify it. So just purely sauna, sweating, exercising is all the other benefits exercise has. But the other one is just getting toxins out of your body, water, and then the diet. So other detoxifications, like necessary doing like certain substances or drinking lemon or whatever. Yeah, those sometimes are needed on certain people, but in general, people have to eliminate the exposures as much as possible, and then sweat.
I love that. And it's interesting that you say that because you said it earlier as well, you can't just add peptides, supplements, whatever it is, until you've taken away the source of what's driving the inflammation, the dysfunction, whatever the case. And so it's such an interesting concept that I think, again, we're all coming back to, which is take away the offense before you bring in the repair, or as you're bringing in the repair, whatever. Right. I mean, we're not going to let people suffer
I have different patients that some I do start on a peptide right away. Some it will take some time to get to the peptide because you have to optimize the body. You have to get it. So you remember when you were 20 and you had a bad eating day, the next day you got better fast, but you turned 40 or 50. That's why when I turned 50 and I'm like, I'm eating better than I did when I'm 20. Why am I gaining 10 pounds a year?
Horrible.
Is that just, I'm just supposed to accept that? That's what I think as society did. I'm supposed to accept that I'm, and my cholesterol, that cholesterol is the parent hormone. Cholesterol makes the other hormones. So if I'm going through menopause and I'm not making progesterone and estrogen anymore, so the parent hormone cholesterol is going to, my body's going to say, hey, I want estrogen. I'm going to make more cholesterol, but it doesn't make estrogen. So now my cholesterol goes high and I'm supposed to just say, oh, a woman at 45 has lower risk of heart disease. And now I'm 55 and I've gone through menopause and now I have a worse risk of heart disease than men. And now I have a worse risk of dementia than men, because men at 55 will still have estrogen. Their testosterone is decreasing, but they'll still make estrogen. So I'm supposed to just say, okay, I'm supposed to just deteriorate now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And no, I'm like, no, that's not okay. We're not going to deteriorate. We're going to optimize our lifestyle, optimize all the food, sleep, stress. And then I'm going to add hormones when I need it.
Yeah.
Where we find out which ones we need. And there's several. Vitamin D is a hormone.
Yeah.
Testosterone's a hormone, estrogen, progesterone, thyroid, and the DHEA. We're going to add these hormones and optimize them how we need it and listen to our patient. How do we feel? How are we doing? And then we make sure we're not inflamed, we're clean, and we add peptides. And it's just amazing. The cell is like, hello.
Yeah.
I'm living now. This is awesome. We energize. I had a patient at 83. He's already optimized on hormones. He broke his back. He was on a ladder, probably shouldn't have been. Very active man.
But he was feeling good.
He was feeling good. Actually still works. Had a L1 compression fracture. Did some peptides because he was in a good place. Did some peptides. He saw his orthopedic 3 weeks, I think it was 2.5 to 3 weeks later. And they're like, you're healing like you're like 8 weeks out. And he's like, yeah, I feel good. I don't have any pain anymore. I'm a little achy sometimes, but so you have to, the body can do it. You just have to give the body that signaler. Peptides are signalers. So yeah, it's amazing.
So let me ask you this. So let's say you come across a patient who's in their 70s or even in their early 80s, and nobody's ever touched their hormones because they bought into that sad story that hormone replacement isn't natural and it's going to kill you. And we now know that was like the biggest, fattest lie ever,
right?
Which we won't get into today.
But, no, we won't.
It's a tragedy, but anyway. So you get a patient like that comes to you, they're feeling miserable, they have no hormones to speak of at this point, their testosterone, estrogen, whatever. And whether they're a man or a woman, it's the same. They both need both and everything else. Would you start hormone therapy with someone that late in the game, even just to help them feel better?
Yes, I definitely have. And I definitely would. I have several advanced age patients who need hormones. So they're 80. I've had 80-year-old patients. I've had 70-year-old patients, and I do start hormones, and we do watch closely and we talk a lot, but they've had leaps and bound benefits. I have an 89-year-old patient who is still completely functional. I think hearing is her biggest thing because she doesn't want to wear a hearing aid, but she does her hormones. And she said, look at my nails. Why are my nails so thick and why are they growing? Wow. And she walks around singing and dancing. And yes, you can start. It is optimal to start your hormones as they decrease to have the optimal effect on preventing chronic diseases, because our hormones are very much related. The decrease in our hormones are related to chronic diseases, but you still get good effects from in later in life. And definitely.
That's so interesting. That's really great. Well, and so let's talk a bit about the hormones and the chronic diseases. So the relationship between those hormones. So type 2, like you just talked about a minute ago with cholesterol, for example. So a conventional doctor's approach to this woman who comes in, whose cholesterol's gone up, whose other hormones have gone to hell in a handbasket, as it were.
Right.
The response is probably going to be, well, now we need to give you a statin so that we can keep your cholesterol under control, which, you know, we both know is not necessarily the best answer. It is an answer, but not the best one. But then, you know, can we talk, like, let's talk about these hormones and cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, and even frankly, cognitive effects, right? Because the loss of estrogen in the brain is what leads to that whole menopause brain problem, like the loss of memory and dementia. So
yeah, cognitive decline. So yeah, so you need to optimize the hormones. And then Western medicine and giving medications that you might actually get a number down, but you're not treating the whole body. So that isn't, you don't show that you prevent heart disease, but giving hormones in multiple studies have shown that it prevents and reverses diabetes and heart disease.
Wow.
So you get a better number, yes, but you also get the results, which you want. So a woman, what is the woman going to die from in her 60s and 70s? The risk of cancers, actually hormones do prevent cancer. Once you have a cancer, you need to see an oncologist and go off a hormone. That's another thing, but you're going to die from heart disease. A woman is more likely to die from a heart attack than she is to die from breast cancer. So, and hormones do not cause breast cancer. So they actually prevent breast cancer. All the studies show that. So what you need to do if there is that risk, people can get breast cancer, and then if they have a hormone response of breast cancer, they go on treatment and they get healed and we go on from there. But if you don't have a hormone response of breast cancer, you need to take hormones to prevent breast cancer, but take hormones to prevent dementia, heart disease, elevated cholesterol, diabetes.
The whole nine yards. Yeah.
And you've all heard, I don't like when people say, oh, my brain, my menopausal brain, and I can't think. That's not okay.
Yeah. Well, they've been told it's okay, right? They've been told. Right. I mean, I was told by a doctor years ago, when, as I was in perimenopause, so before, you know, and I said, oh my God, I've never had PMS in my life. And all of a sudden I feel like hell. And I, you know, like the sky is falling every month. And she looked at me and she goes, well, deal with it. You know, like you're in, this is what
happened. Why am I anxious, doctor? Why?
And then I'm like, what do you mean deal with it?
Yeah, why am I anxious? Why can't I sleep? Why am I having these horrible thoughts of that something bad's going to happen? And like, I'm 50 and this never happened to me before. I'm 45 and you'll just have to deal with it like everybody else.
Yeah. No.
But our body is deteriorating. These are signs.
Yeah. So ladies and men, frankly, because men too, there's absolutely a better way.
Yes, there's a definitely better way. So I had a patient, she had gone through menopause about 4 years, hadn't been on hormones. She and her husband were having he was a little older. They were both having a lot of sexual dysfunction. She was going to her doctor and was going to a physical therapist to relax her pelvic floor. She'd been doing this for like 4 months, going through physical therapy. And she's like, why doesn't it work anymore? She couldn't work. So we talked, it was days after hormone replacement, everything changed. She was able to have sex again. And then her husband, of course, was treated. You always treat the couple. You want them both to be, and they have a wonderful sexual relationship. And that's, you want that. Who would want to lose that? You're not supposed to just stop.
Yeah. 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 No, yeah. That's amazing. That's fantastic. Okay. Well then, you know what, let's move on to peptides. Let's talk about, I mean, you pick the number, the 1, 2, or 3 peptides that in your practice you have found, once you've done all that foundation work that we just talked about, you've optimized hormones, you've gotten the diet in line, the whole nine yards. So what are the peptides in your mind that can make the biggest difference for people in certain situations?
Of course, CJC 1295, that's one of the growth hormone secretagogues. So when I say a secretagogue, so it's a peptide, which is a shorter chain of amino acids. That one is 28. It, you pulse it at night, it goes into your body, and then it tells the pituitary to release the growth hormone. That an 80-year-old person has as much growth hormone in their pituitary gland as a 20-year-old. It's just that it can't get out. Huh. So your body, your cells are ready to release it. So this peptide goes to the cell and says, hello, it's a messenger, it's a signaling agent that lets your body naturally pulse out growth hormone. Growth hormone comes out of your body. So why do you have growth hormone? It's actually, that peptide is from ghrelin, which is a enzyme in your stomach. It's a peptide in your stomach naturally. So you eat. You want that food to do the right thing. You want that food to tell your brain to pulse out growth hormone. Growth hormone will say, we need to build muscle. Yeah. We need to decrease fat. And now we're going to tell we protect our brain. We protect our bones. We protect everything to be functioning properly. So it gets the body to be releasing it naturally. So people used to, in the past, you probably heard, oh, growth hormone, you get it from Mexico, you inject it and you feel great. But if you continue to just give yourself growth hormone, when we talked about receptors again, you have to remember, we have to go back to the cell. If you give an unnatural amount of growth hormone in an unnatural way in boluses every day, those receptors are going to involute. They're going to stop working. So then now I can't respond to growth hormone. Peptides are different. Peptides, like we said, go back to the cell. It goes into the cells, tells the cell to pulse out your growth hormone naturally at night when it's supposed to be pulsed out. And then it naturally does everything it's supposed to do. So you get your muscles back, you lose weight, you get your neurocognitive back, you protect your heart, your lungs, everything. So CJC usually works along with epimorelin, which is another type of releasing peptide for growth hormone.
Yeah.
So those are very much a mainstay for everybody as they age, and sometimes earlier if you're having issues. So that's a really good peptide. Another favorite of mine is BPC, actually another gastric. We all talk about, now the new thing is that our gut talks to our brain, and it does. So that's why food is important. So BPC comes in, and if your gut is exposed to the outside world, so everything you put in there, it could be leaky. That means toxins that you're eating, it leaks into your body, and it causes your body to say, hey, I don't like that. It gets inflamed, and you get autoimmune disorders. You get arthritis, you get lupus, you get MS, because that's because you're letting in toxins. So BPC goes in and heals the gut.
Yeah.
It heals ulcers, but it's also the component of a peptide that actually goes to the joints to heal bones and joints. So it's a very good healing peptide. And it also gives you a little boost of growth hormone, actually. So sometimes with younger patients, I had a patient who had a back injury. He was in his 40s. He still was young, but he the BPC healed his back, but he's also got his workouts were better. He was getting a little bit of enough of a growth hormone boost for him that was helping him.
I've actually learned on BPC-157 that it also helps to sensitize the growth hormone receptors.
Right. So that's what we said. So even like when we talked about CJC releasing growth hormone, there's actually receptors on the cells for CJC itself, and it makes the cell do beneficial things other than just releasing the growth hormone. These are so multifaceted. So your body, every cell in your body reacts to it. So it releases what it needs. So BPC does increase your sensitivity to growth hormone and gives you a little bit of release of growth hormone.
Yeah, they're really quite spectacular, these peptides. Okay, great.
The last thing, so you can't forget the immune system.
No.
So our immune system is so important, and the thymusins are super beneficial on getting our immune system in its right place. So it has to be, everything in the cell has to be at homeostasis. Everything has to be in balance. Everything about our life should be in balance. So when we think about, when we talked about toxins and doing antioxidants, you have to have a balance between redox and oxidation. So you have to be at that sweet balance. And that's what I think that where you need a doctor and peptides to help you out with. Now let's go to your immune system. If you have a dog that's just barking like crazy, he's not doing his job, right? He's barking at everything. Yeah. He's barking at the mailman. He's barking at everything. So that means it's a hyperactive dog. That's like your immune system. If you get your immune system where it's barking at everything, it's going to attack itself. That's autoimmune. Absolutely. If you get an immune system that's too low, you get sick all the time. Mm-hmm. Viruses come in, you don't know how to fight anything, but you have to have it at that sweet spot, that homeostatic spot where your immune system is ready to go and ready to fight the right things. So that's where we use immune modulators, peptides. And these things, that's what we talk about with synergy with everything. It's such a complex. So sometimes you have to use one peptide. Sometimes you add some. Sometimes you do a time in your life, you do this peptide, because you look at where your body is at and where you're functioning and getting it back to that balance.
Yeah. So with the thymus, so we're talking obviously about thymusin alpha 1 and thymusin beta 4, although thymusin beta 4 often gets used more as a repair peptide, but I think people often forget it has a lot of immune properties as well, because it is as well a thymus peptide.
Right. I like to use it for repair, but I like to use it sometimes when you need to get I used it to get people ready for COVID, actually. So some people need to use it as a short term for a certain period of time, a couple months a year, to get your immune system back optimized and ready to fight. So, but it is a repair peptide too. People use it with BPC sometimes, and it does help repair. But it does boost. Alpha 1 is more keeping you always at a ready state with your thyroid, I mean, with your immune system. But yeah, they're both beneficial in their own way.
Yeah, with thymusin alpha 1, and I mean, I've mentioned this in other podcasts, like my parents are both in their 80s and they're both still working, actually, which is awesome. I mean, some days I think they wish they weren't, but truthfully, I think it's part of what keeps them young.
Definitely.
But I've had them using, you know, a low dose of thymusin alpha 1 pretty much for the last 8-9 months now, as the world has gone a little topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
Just, definitely. You know, I mean, the logic being, you know, that if you keep, to your point, if you can have the immune system in a balanced state, and the immune system does, like everything else, it declines as we age.
Well, yeah, we have the organ in our system as an infant, the thymus, it implodes, and we don't have it anymore. So the immune system needs help. But we need to do it, like we said, like everything, we need to get the immune system to be balanced and the cell to be acting right. So all the proper immune cells have to be ready to go. But thymusins really do make the immune system at a ready state. And they do protect you or treat autoimmune disorders.
Yeah, no, and we've seen this in increasingly. And even with thymusin alpha 1, with the current virus that's making the rounds right now with COVID, I've seen studies that, I mean, I believe that there have been a number of trials in hospitals where they've used thymusin alpha 1 in physiologic dose, in therapeutic doses.
Correct. Yeah, and I'm just in therapeutic doses, so, and seeing good results. But I'm hoping that hospitals will be able to use these things more readily in acute settings. They're using acute strokes, they're using neuroprotective hormones. But we have to get over a monetary step that controls medicine.
Yeah.
So, but we are going to treat our patients, and we're going to treat them to protect their bodies heal their bodies and get their bodies at a state to heal itself. So that's where I'm at. You got to rethink how you want to age. Like you said, I think if you want to be working at 80, my dad, like you, I was saying, my dad's still working too, 83. But you want to give that person that opportunity, and they shouldn't think otherwise.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. So with your patients, would you typically have them do kind of little cycles of peptides over the course of the year, just to kind of clean up shop? Like, you don't wait for them to be broken, do you? Or do you?
No.
So like, what's your attitude around that?
Yeah. Some will become broken in some way. They've had a lot of stress in the body. So the broken ones, we have things to fix. But there is peptides that you use 5 days a week, probably continuously, like maybe CJC. You have to, sometimes they'll use a peptide like a thymosin beta 4 for a 3 week cycle or a 3 month cycle. Sometimes they'll use some neuropeptides for just a 5 weeks. So patients are at a different places of autophagy. So that's cell death, and cell death is natural. So you want some cells, when they get old, should die. If they don't replicate properly, should die. But if they come to a point where there's a bunch of them that are near death, and then they secrete inflammatory things. So sometimes you want to go in and clean up some of those dead cells. And there's peptides that do that. They go in and tell your body, let's clean up these. And it protects the young cells who can be affected by these dying cells. So as cells die and go in senescence, they become inflammasomes. They secrete out all these inflammatory, and that goes out and attacks the cells next to it. And the cell next to it might be a stem cell. It's a nice baby cell that needs to grow and be a new cell. So you need to, sometimes patients need to take a peptide that can go in and clean them up. But you don't need to do that all the time. You do those for cycles throughout the year. And then they work in synergy. BPC works in synergy with thymosin, works in synergy with CJC. So
nice. So you're talking about peptides as senolytics?
Peptides are senolytics, yes.
So the only one I know of is FOXO3.
AOD is a senolytic.
Is it really?
Yeah, AOD has some senolytic properties.
Huh. Who knew? I swear to you, every time I talk to someone, I'm like, no way. So, because AOD, of course, 9604, that's the one that was, people had high hopes for it as an anti-obesity drug.
Right.
It works really well for some people, not so well for others. But then somebody else somehow discovered that if you inject it into the knees of arthritic bunnies with hyaluronic acid, it does magical things for regenerating cartilage. And now we're talking about it as a senolytic peptide. That's pretty cool.
Right. And then there's neurodegenerative. So like Dihexa.
Yeah.
There's a lot of research on it right now with Parkinson's disease. I use it with patients who've had strokes. So we're going to see how much it does with cleaning up the macrophages are going to go in and clean up the dead cells in the brain and clean up any thing that's going to cause increase in dementia. So I think Dihexa might be some senolytic. So senolytic aspect of Dihexa too.
Amazing. So in your practice, it sounds like you deal with all ages, but do you deal a lot in more mature patients or?
I do, but I also deal with PCOS and a lot of young women with those kind of pre-diabetic issues, pre-metabolic syndrome issues, because that is a hormone problem and an insulin problem. I deal with a lot of 40-year-old that are, it's when they come to the realization of themselves. So it has to be an equal thing. So you have to be ready to tell me, I want to feel good and be healthy, and then I can help you at that stage. So I do have a lot of young professionals in their 40s too. But as a woman in her 50s, I do have a special relationship with women. And a lot of men, well, I shouldn't say men, but a lot of people are scared of women. So estrogen is way more complex than testosterone. There's different subtypes. And we have progesterone. And women are like snowflakes. We're very unique. And every person is unique. So I love dealing with the uniqueness of women and helping them go through perimenopause is a very different beast than menopause.
Yeah.
And so perimenopause can scare a lot of people, the women themselves and the doctor, because you can have an estrogen of 500 one day and estrogen of 0 the next day.
Yeah.
So you really need to know how to work with those women. So I love all stages of people. But of course, being a menopausal woman and going through it, every time you have a personal life experience, you're only going to be a smarter practitioner.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
I've got patients in their 80s, near 90. I don't think I have anybody over 90 right now, but I do have an 89-year-old. love that age, 70s. I have an old pastor who had a stroke the week after he stepped down from the pulpit, and he couldn't speak. He died. But, you know, I think poor pastors are helpers that help everybody else and don't help themselves. Yeah. Eat all the food that are given to them at church. Diabetic, hypertension, kidney disease, a couple strokes, AFib. And he's 70 now and has a great relationship with his wife, functional, living at home. He's diabetes is under control. No, his kidneys have stayed the same. His brain is functional. No, he can speak. Everything is working well. So you're dealing with different things. Are you at a preventative stage? Sometimes, yes, 40s, 30s. But you know that most heart disease starts in their teens and 20s.
Yeah, well, it takes decades, right? People don't, I mean, and this is something that I think a lot of people are starting to understand this now, but it's taken a long time to help people to see that it takes decades for disease to build in the body. And that's part of the magic of the human body, right? Yeah. It will manage with whatever crap we throw at it for as long as it possibly can until the day when it's like, okay, you know, something's got to give. And even then it keeps working. It just doesn't work as well, right? So helping people to understand the decisions that they make earlier on are going to affect them later. And actually, do you find, and I'm finding this myself in my practice, do you find that there's younger people that are more, they seem to be more engaged now than—
Oh, definitely.
Like they, that invincibility thing almost seems to have, in a sad way, but in a good way, like, you know, younger people are starting to come to the realization like, oh, like being bloated all the time isn't the way I'm supposed to feel. Right. I'm willing to do something about it.
So when you're 20 and you realize that, why do I have IBS and I'm 20 years old? Do you know that somebody born in the 90s has, I think it's a 2-fold risk of colon cancer and a 4-fold risk of rectal cancer? So was it because you're born in the 90s or is it because of what's in our food?
Yeah.
So that's not okay. And I think they're realizing this is not okay that I feel this way. So I love to work with, you know, kids in their 20s, children to me, and then, but 30s, 40s, but I do. I think 40 is a sweet spot when they're really like, why am I tired all the time? I should, you know, I can't get through the day without that third or fourth cup of coffee. Those you can do a lot of help with. But yeah, I work with all ages, but I do specialize in women, I guess, but men are easier.
It's not that we're calling you simple, guys. It's just that women are more complex, complicated.
Women are more complex, and they know that.
And we know that. It's part of our appeal or something.
Yes.
Part of your appeal is that you're not as complex.
Yes, exactly. But you know, testosterone is a phenomenal hormone, and men respond to it quite readily, but they respond to growth hormones too, right, quite readily. So they there's complex men, and they're more complex in the fact that really getting to know their diet and their sleep and understanding that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, no. And I recently, not to go too far down this rabbit hole because I felt a bit bad, but I had a recent conversation with another practitioner, and we talked a little bit about the wine, you know, drinking alcohol and how, you know, especially in more affluent circles, well, not even just more affluent circles. I mean, anywhere, like beer drinking, wine drinking, and helping people to understand how that can really be, and it can really hold them back from reaching their goals, and hard it is because of the societal pressures, how hard it is sometimes to get our heads around just stepping away from that stuff. And it can be.
This self-isolation thing has really brought that back to the mind. I have patients who have said, do you think those, you know, 3 whiskeys I'm drinking every week, because I'm just, by the end of the day, I'm done with all this. I'm like, yeah, that's probably hindering your lifestyle.
Yeah. No,
how to deal with, I think the stresses that are going on right now and the self-isolation and the dealing with the mental illness right now is a big part of helping people grow and mature and get healthier. And you can't forget that part. You can't forget, you know, hormones themselves, lack of testosterone, thyroid, estrogen make you depressed. And so you add that on top of working at home or losing your job or being afraid of getting sick. That has to be all dealt with. So yeah, and alcohol, using that on top of this does cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the good news is there's people like you out there who are helping people through this and giving them alternate strategies.
Oh, yes. And it's teaching. It's a teaching. It's an empowering, like we talked about before.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it's really, I love the way, I have to say, you know, doing what I do now and getting to talk to all you guys, I love the way that medicine is going. It's still not the mainstream,
right?
But it's, if you even look in the last 5 years or the last 10 years, how it's picked up steam. And, you know, for a while, people were poo-pooing this whole functional medicine thing or whatever. But I think at this point, more and more, even conventional doctors are having to sit up and look over and go, well, what is it that you guys are doing over there? And pulling people out of the ER, as it were.
Yeah, I'd like to see less people in the ER.
For sure, for sure. But, you know, and I mean, the ER has a place, right? I mean, I was talking about this with a client today that, look, if you have a crisis, you get hit by a bus or you have, there's a need for the
right. But that's what it should be for. It's for that. It shouldn't be for somebody who is, you know, anxious and anxiety because they're not getting the proper care. It shouldn't be for the person that can't get preventative care from their primary doctor. And that's what happens. They can't get preventative care. They aren't told how to eat.
Yeah.
I countless times I've talked to a person is like, did your doctor talk to you about your diet? Did he talk to you about what metformin does, what it's good for, about fasting, when you should eat? No, they just don't. So, and that's what I love to do.
That's amazing. Well, and I think in, I don't know if it's in defense or whatever, but you know, the conventional medicine model right now is not structured to enable doctors to have the time to be able to have the time. Never mind the fact that for many of them, you know, it would require doing what you did and taking a step back and going back to the books and relearning a certain amount of stuff and shoring up your knowledge in a different way.
And you have to go back and teach patients that they have to invest now in their health, that they will save them a lot in the future, but investing in it outside of the insurance world, which has a different modality and different concept of what they're doing.
Yeah.
The preventative care is an investment now. And then in the future, when you're 70 and 80 and you're not using all that money aside from your insurance, because it's going to cost you a ton of money when you get sick and unhealthy and you can't walk, but you invest now, you will save in the future. You'll feel better. You'll spend a lot less money. Just like if you invest in your teeth, if you get your teeth cleaned, you won't fall out and get dentures when you're older. You got to invest in your body, in decreasing the inflammation, decreasing all your risk factors, supplementing your hormones, using the peptides to get your cells to work right. You will save a lot of money in the long run when you're not in a nursing home, you're not with a walker, a wheelchair, all that stuff you need to just get around. So
love it.
Definitely save. And so that's just changing the mentality of the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the investment, right? Because it is exactly what it is. You're investing in yourself and investing in your future and the future of your loved ones as well, right? Because the healthier we are, the more we can be there for the people around us who need us, kind of thing.
You just got to rethink of how you're going to age.
Yeah.
Right with age, how do you want to do it?
Yeah. Health span, lifespan, and health span.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Hope and happiness and love. And you can have all these things at any age.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. Well, Siobhan, this has been great. Thank you so, so much for agreeing to speak with me today.
I so enjoyed it. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it was a pleasure. So why don't you tell people where they can find you? So when tell us a little bit about, you know, how they can connect with you and where your practice is, that whole 9 yards.
I'm Newman MD Life Care is the name of my practice. We are currently, with COVID, we decided to redefine everything with the website. So that's coming soon, but you can always reach me at admin@newmanlifecare.com. So that goes directly to me, admin@newmanlifecare.com. And then as soon as you get my website, my website will be up, but it's Newman MD Life Care.
Amazing. Love it. Thank you so much. This is great.
You.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnidham.com.
biohackingsupermember.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.